against those attacks. Chapter 14. Industrial Espionage. The threat of information attacks against government, corporations, and university systems is well established. Almost every day, the media reports a new computer virus, denial-of-service attack, or theft of credit card information from an e-commerce website. We read about cases of industrial espionage, such as Borland accusing Symantec of stealing trade secrets, Cadence Design Systems filing a suit charging the theft of source code by a competitor. Many business people read these stories and think it could never happen at their company. It's happening every day. Variation on a Scheme. The ruse described in the following tale has probably been pulled off many times, even though it sounds like something taken out of a Hollywood movie like The Insider, or from the pages of a John Grisham novel. Class Action. Imagine that a massive class action lawsuit is raging against a major pharmaceutical company, PharmoMedic. The suit claims that they knew one of their very popular drugs had a devastating side effect, but one that would not be evident until a patient had been on the medication for years. The suit alleges that they had results from a number of research studies that revealed this danger, but suppressed the evidence and never turned it over to the FDA as required. William Billy Cheney, the attorney of record on the masthead of the New York law firm that filed the class action suit, has depositions from two PharmoMedic doctors supporting the claim. But both are retired, neither has any files or documentation, and neither would make a strong, convincing witness. Billy knows he's on shaky ground. Unless he can get a copy of one of those reports, or some internal memo or communication between company executives, his whole case will fall apart. So, he hires a firm he's used before, Andreessen and Sons, private investigators. Billy doesn't know how Pete and his people get the stuff they do, and he doesn't want to know. All he knows that Pete Andreessen is one good investigator. To Andreessen, an assignment like this is what he calls a black bag job. The first rule is that the law firms and companies that hire him never learn how he gets his information, so that they always have complete plausible deniability. If anybody is going to have his feet shoved into boiling water, it's going to be Pete. And for what he collects in fees on the big jobs, he figures it's worth the risk. Besides, he gets such personal satisfaction from outsmarting smart people. If the documents that Cheney wants him to find actually existed and haven't been destroyed, they'll be somewhere in the files of PharmoMedic. But finding them in the massive files of a large corporation would be a huge task. On the other hand, suppose they've turned copies over to their law firm, Jenkins and Petrie. If the defense attorneys knew those documents existed and didn't turn them over as part of the discovery process, then they have violated the legal profession's canon of ethics and violated the law as well. In Pete's book, that makes any attack fair game. Pete's attack. Pete gets a couple of his people started on research, and within days he knows what company Jenkins and Petrie uses for storing their off-site backups. And he knows that the storage company maintains a list of the names of people whom the law firm has authorized to pick up tapes from storage. He also knows that each of these people has his or her own password. Pete sends two of his people out on a black bag job. The men tackle the lock, using a lockpick gun ordered on the web at www.southord.com. Within several minutes, they slip into the offices of the storage firm around 3 a.m. one night and boot up a PC. They smile when they see the Windows 98 logo because it means that this will be a piece of cake. Windows 98 does not require any form of authentication. After a bit of searching, they locate a Microsoft Access database with the names of people authorized by each of the storage company customers to pick up tapes. They add a phony name to the authorization list for Jenkins and Petrie, a name matching one on a phony driver's license one of the men has already obtained. Could they have broken into the locked storage area and tried to locate the tapes their client wanted? Sure. But then all the company's customers, including the law firm, would have certainly been notified of the breach, and the attackers would have lost an advantage. Professionals always like to leave an opening for future access, should the need arise. Following a standard practice of industrial spies to keep something in the back pocket for future use just in case, they also made a copy of the file containing the authorization list onto a floppy disk. None of them had any idea how it might ever prove useful, but it's just one of those, we're here, we might just as well, things that every now and then turns out to be valuable. The next day, one of the same men called the storage company, used the name they had added to the authorization list, and gave the corresponding password. He asked for all the Jenkins and Petrie tapes dated within the last month, and said that a messenger service would come by to pick up the package. By mid-afternoon, Andreessen had the tapes. His people restored all the data to their own computer system, ready to search at leisure. Andreessen was very pleased that the law firm, like most other businesses, didn't bother encrypting their backup data.